It's because Portland is the kind of city that doesn't believe that views of Mount Hood should only be for the rich. We are the kind of city that believes that a public view of Mount Hood should be accessible, should be egalitarian, should be something that can't be made private. I love to see the weather beacon as I cross the Vista Bridge. I love to see the lower slopes and the snow cap of Mount Hood. Proposed heights would block off the weather beacon and would only save views of the snow cap. Vista Bridge has a striking view because of the contrast between the low slopes and the snow cap. It would only take lowering heights 48 feet on 8 properties to save today's view of Mount Hood and the weather beacon. Please add an amendment to save this view that defines Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to address the council. I am here to speak concerning the same two amendments. Let me say by way of preface on another subject, that on the subject of affordable housing, my condominium is less affordable than ever, and it's due entirely to property taxes, which rose 19% last year. So it does seem to me that affordable housing initiatives and inexorably rising property taxes are at cross purposes. Now, on the subject of the amendments, 10 years ago, my wife and I moved to Portland because the city was said to be special, enlightened, livable, ecologically aware. In all candor, now that 10 years have passed, Portland seems less special with every passing year. As the entire nation was shown on 60 Minutes, the problems afflicting American cities in general now plague Portland as well. These problems are intractable, and I am not here to talk about them. I do wish to submit, however, that destroying the assets that the city still retains seems an odd approach to mitigating Portland's problems. Rather, this will only add to them by hastening the day when Portland becomes just another generic American city whose residents flee to the suburbs. Like Mr. Josiah Failing, writing in the Portland Tribune 3 days ago, I too favor development in the central city on the condition that new buildings are well designed. At the same time, I also join Mr. Failing in asking how much longer before Portland ceases to be Portland. Like them, I applaud the enlightened women on City Council for their effort to honor the stewardship of past generations by preserving the views of Mount Hood and Vista Bridge that visitors and residents alike are currently able to enjoy. There is already plenty of room for tall buildings without having to obliterate iconic views in order to accommodate more.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. My testimony is a response to Volume 2A, Amendment 21, View of Vista Bridge. My name is Greg Wimmer, and I'm a member of Jefferson Holdings, the owner of the property located on Southwest Jefferson and Southwest 18th, and also a business owner in the Goose Hollow neighborhood. During the Planning and Sustainability Commission work sessions, the Vista Bridge view from the Jefferson Street overpass was discussed in detail regarding the proposed height adjustment for development. City staff studied the view street extensively for the PSC and provided detailed recommendations based on precise measurements. City staff and PSC recommended a 75-foot maximum building height for our property, which would allow for a typical 5-over-1 residential structure. The 75-foot building height was also proven not to block the view of the Vista Bridge. The PSC reviewed the data and voted to approve the 75-foot building height at this location. With the Goose Hollow Max Stop directly across the street from our property, it provides an ideal location for multifamily housing. This position is strongly supported by TriMet and City Council, with the intent of clustering development around Max Stops. Please see the attached letter from TriMet. This location is a clear example of an economic and social opportunity for multifamily housing directly next to a Max Stop. Voting for this amendment would be a complete reversal and rejection of the work done by city staff and the PSC. We ask the City Council to affirm and support the recommendations from the city staff and PSC by voting no on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all three of you.
Next three are Josiah Failing, Zoe Lynn Powers, and Christy White. And they'll be followed by Aisha Lorenz, Lee Doss, and Bill Failing.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I think I'm next. I'm Josiah Failing. I'm be talking about Volume 2A, Part 1, 20 and 21. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and council members. I'm here today to talk a bit about the past, but more about the future. In 1858, one of my ancestors sent a letter enticing her East Coast cousin to visit the then new town of Portland. Though 'tis wet and rainy, it does not affect one as you would not as you would naturally suppose. Rain or mud over ankle is no obstacle if we wish to visit or do shopping. I think you would come on and behold the beauties and wonders of Portland for yourself. The view was most magnificent. The valleys, inland lakes, and snow-clad mountains are at once revealed in this extended landscape, and over all is spread a glorious canopy of the most ethereal blue, brilliantly clear air, as pure as the mountain snow. Can you resist so much?
Yeah. Though a bit old. For Travel Portland. The blue, yes. Remember the blue?
Though a bit older in prose, this letter reminds me of the New York Times and BuzzFeed articles we've all seen in the past 10 years touting Portland's unique landscape and character. Today I'm speaking specifically about two viewpoints that I feel are an essential part of the character of Portland, the views of Mount Hood from both the Salmon Springs Fountain and the Vista Bridge. Back in my namesake's era, one could likely view Mount Hood from the entirety of the waterfront, especially considering mud over ankle is no obstacle. Losing views of Mount Hood has been an unfortunate consequence of growth since then, which makes preserving the remaining views all the more important. I sincerely applaud the effort that has gone into crafting the 2035 plan, but I'm here to remind you of the long-term value these unique natural resources bring. Consider the ramifications of gradually obstructing views of Mount Hood. Will we eventually be just another cookie-cutter metropolis with high-rise buildings lining a river downtown? Let's take a look back towards the days when Portland was heralded as the trailblazer in urban planning. Tough decisions are required to protect what we have. If we continue to consider economic growth potential as the most important criteria for our city of the future, how much of Portland will we have left? I'd like for my children, and their East Coast cousins to view the sentinel of our city that is Mount Hood from these historically meaningful locations. Thank you.
Josiah, can I just ask you, because I'm trying to keep your distinguished family tree straight, what's your relationship to Bill Failing?
Bill Failing's my dad.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Zoe Powers on behalf of Zeidel Yards. I'm here to express support for two amendments to help facilitate the Zeidel Yards master plan, particularly related to the adaptive reuse of the barge building. The first, which is listed as Amendment 1 of Volume 2A, Part 1, relates to the eastern section of the barge building. The current code has the unintended consequence of drawing the greenway setback line, which is 100 feet from top of bank, directly through the barge building, precluding any additional height. The reason for this anomaly is that the top of bank line was originally drawn up and around the man-made slipway that launched the Zeidel barges, even though the actual waterline extends only a short way up the slipway. This creates a second setback along the north-south axis, where there's already an east-west setback from the actual river. The oddly located north-south setback is not providing a height setback from the river, because the river also runs north-south. This has the effect of significantly reducing the height of the buildings around the slipway, even though they are not adjacent to the river. To allow the adaptive reuse illustrated in the Zeidel Master Plan, this amendment would establish a new height reference line that follows the top of bank line, except where it crosses across the slipway. I want to emphasize that any height around the slipway will be set back from the actual river in the same way as all of the other buildings along the river are set back. The second amendment, which is listed as Amendment 6 in Volume 2A, Part 1, relates to the western section of the barge building. The current barge building footprint is over 80,000 square feet, and a likely tenant type in the barge building may need 50,000 square feet or more of that space for an adaptive retail reuse. The current code limit on retail in the South Waterfront is 40,000 square feet. The amendment would change the 40,000 square foot cap for permitted retail use to 50,000 square feet, but retain the current conditional use cap of 60,000 square feet. It's a modest change in the code that will facilitate the reuse of the existing barge building. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Mayor, if I could, we had testimony earlier from the Regional Arts and Culture Council about public art and some development, and Zidell was mentioned. Could you share with us the opinion you have on that question?
On public art? I know the Zidell family is very much in support of public art, and that Charlene Zidell has been working to create a master plan for the property to think about public art sort of in a broader context rather than on a parcel-by-parcel basis.
Okay, so we've been asked to craft an amendment based on something RAC testified about, so we may need to talk to you to make sure we get it right.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Christy White, here to testify on Amendment 18 for Mr. Menasche. The Planning and Sustainability Commission reduced Mr. Menasche's base height from 350 feet to 125 feet, which was a loss of 225 feet on a single parcel. Recognizing this, BPS offered a compromise of 160 feet, restoring 35 of the 225-foot loss, and we appreciate that effort. However, we would like to offer a different compromise. The 160 feet utilized by BPS was based on a datum point for another nearby building and the notion that 160 feet might be more in line with the character of the historic district. The problem with that rationale is totally unrelated to our existing base height of 350 feet. And the selected height reduction is a datum point from a single building that wasn't built under the current zoning and has no relation to the efforts, objectives, and goals of the 2035 regulatory environment. For example, inclusionary housing was not in place when that single datum point was constructed, nor was the city nor the owner of this property faced with the kind of issues that we face today to resolve the housing crisis. So a height of 160 feet forces a building that it will be built to the property lines in a muscular form. And the reason for that is because we have a base FAR of 9-1 and a bonus opportunity of 3-1 because of inclusionary zoning. To use that within 160 feet, you're going to build a muscular form to the property lines. That muscular form will not necessarily be set back from the Chinese garden. Instead, we can minimize our height loss at 250 feet, and that allows you a more sensitive and slender building form that is opportunities to utilize that 3-1 inclusionary housing bonus and set it back from the Chinese garden. The point is we can accept some loss in height and even significant loss in height. We can meet you halfway. We can accept a maximum base and bonus height of 250 feet. This will be a 100-foot loss in base height rather than the 190-foot loss BPS has proposed. We can also accept a loss of all of our bonus height potential. This compromise would at least protect a reasonable unit count, encourage sensitive design options, and preserve property tax and SDC revenues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry for going over.
Mm-hmm. Next three, please.
Are Aisha Lorenz, Lee Doss, and Bill Failing, and they'll be followed by 40, 41, and 47. I believe the first name is Jeff Friendbing, maybe. John Hollister and Jan Pettit.
And I don't know, Carla, are there still people in the overflow rooms?
They're going to check.
There's several seats here if people want to come in. Good afternoon. Would you like to start, please?
Hello, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. I'm Aisha Lorenz, Secretary for SWIRL Neighborhood Association and Library for a Muslim Community of Portland, and they both support me in this. The reason I decided to go door-to-door in very cold weather last month and ending up getting 180 signatures is because of my shock that people just weren't aware of the view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs Fountain and of our beloved Vista Bridge were threatened by the possibility of even taller buildings. They're already too numerous in front of them. I just couldn't sit by passively. I've lived in Portland since 1960. My grandparents, early German settlers, who said Portland's country was God's country, so they stayed here. Forming Lorenz Brothers Builders, who drove up and down historic Vista Bridge frequently while building in downtown and Portland Heights, overlooking beautiful Mount Hood. How can we allow this to happen when those who came before us loved it as much as we do? It's what Portland is known for. Mount Hood from Salmon Springs Fountain is frequently on the travel brochures, and the charming weather beacon that looks like a car antenna is a popular icon, too. Portland's tourism industry brought $5.2 billion in direct spending to us last year. How do you think people will feel after traveling here and then the gorgeous views are obstructed? Hard to believe a democratic society would allow preference to a builder over hundreds, likely thousands of Portlanders who the view matters to. Extra housing, does he say? Most people wouldn't be able to afford to live in those high-rises. Select few, while the majority would be deprived of relaxing views that lessen stress. Please don't privatize the view for a select segment of society. This is not what Portland stands for. Portland and we care for the good of all, not a select segment.
Thank you. And if I could just put out there, and people can feel free to comment on this, this isn't done for developers, at least from my perspective. This is done for more housing. And now, thanks to the good work of Commissioner Saltzman and others, we have the inclusionary housing requirement. So when housing gets built in this city, there will automatically be the requirement for affordability. So every development that happens, yes, developers certainly make money, but there will also be affordable housing, workforce, and lower-income housing that results. And so I want to be very clear. That is my objective here. I'm not here to make people wealthy. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Lee Doss. I have appreciated and been honored to work with or for all of you over decades. I've lived here for over 40 years and graduated from high school in Europe before raising my four children here in the public schools, in the trenches of the public schools, in the neighborhoods, being very civically involved during all of this time. And I just want to echo on 20 and 21 what's been said that was positive. I was asked to come at the last minute and didn't prepare, but I just have appreciated so much each of you showing high integrity and leadership in a city that is watched globally beyond what you can imagine. I was born in Tidewater, Virginia, gave up a scholarship to William and Mary to go to U of O because this is where I wanted to raise my family, and I'm still here. My kids have all gone to the public universities out here. So I care about Portland being more than just what I've personally seen in the belly of the beast around here. You know, I understand the perspective of developers. I have an international business. Our big family home had endless exchange students. Our kids were in Spanish immersion together. You know, I mean, I really care about the global perspective and want to speak for that a little bit by being here, because it isn't just 90 days a year that you see Mount Hood. I've taken all these endless visitors from around the world to see the sunset view almost every day. It's rare that you don't see the sunset view when you're walking downtown. And so even though we all care about that, I mean, all my kids were raised at the Unitarian Church. You can imagine the social justice aspect of this that is important to me. I mean, I think having that public view of Mount Hood, it's not an exaggeration to call it a social justice issue. In addition to being a business person and caring very much that these friends who want to invest in Portland see all these obstacles. So I'm just wanting to support you all finding another way so that you can do both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Bill Failing, recently exposed father of Josiah Failing.
Do you have anything to add to his superb testimony?
Well, I do. Thank you, Commissioner. And this is what I do have to add, is not just my own opinion, but I've been authorized by the SWIRL board to read this on their behalf today. So this really is from the SWIRL board, of which I am one of the members of. Dear Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, please consider our support to preserve the iconic views of Mount Hood and the Vista Bridge for all Portland residents and visitors. These views are threatened by proposed building heights under CC 2035. The SWIRL board strongly supports the height limits in these three corridors. Coming up, view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs Fountain, view of Vista Bridge from I-405 down Southwest Jefferson, view of the weather beacon and lower slopes of Mount Hood from the Vista Bridge. That one kind of surprised me, but that there's quite a constituency for that. We have gathered a petition with names and addresses of 176 people from Portland and surrounding areas who support preservation of the above views, the aforementioned views. Not only do the scenic views of our iconic Mount Hood and Vista Bridge contribute to the quality of life for Portland residents, they are also important tourist attractions. It's vital to preserve them. Portland has become a popular destination to visitors from all over the world. Their tourist dollars support our local economy. Thank you for your consideration. Nancy Seaton and John Newman, SWIRL co-presidents. I, too, am very much a supporter of development in Portland, and I agree with Mayor Wheeler. I think that downtown is a terrific place to expand that density. But I think that it has to be selective, and I think that with height considerations in mind, it's extremely important. And I really want to say this, that I think it's important that we don't have developers on the same committees that are making these decisions.
Yeah.
I think it's church and state here. And right. I just think that it bothers me, frankly, that there is that kind of interaction. There should be a purity to what planning is doing. I was with one very well-known developer yesterday, and I just told him I was going to be testifying today. He's a name you all know. He did a lot of development in Northwest Portland. And he said, Bill, there's something wrong in planning that allow these things to happen. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And it raises an interesting issue because as the prior testimony indicated, it creates at least a perceived conflict, if not a direct conflict. And really the hard trade-off we're going to have to make here, at least on this view issue, is view versus housing. That's the trade-off, and it's a really hard trade-off. And that's why I put the amendment on, because I like the view too. I think it's a really, I agree with you, it's an iconic view. But I also understand that we are in a housing crisis in this city that's going to continue into the foreseeable future. So the question is, how do we trade these off? How do we weigh them? How do we achieve all of our goals?
We respect that.
And there's, in some of these cases, and I appreciate actually where we are in this process, because we're honing down on some very, very specific issues today. We're not discussing broad issues anymore. We're discussing very, very narrow issues, which means we're getting down to the real nut of the subject here, which is good. So I appreciate that testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The next three are John Hollister, Jan Pettit, and we're going to go with Mary Coolidge in that group. And they'll be followed by Michael Mahaffey, Brad Molson, and I believe the first name is Dave Yates.
Very good. Carl, I'm sorry to interrupt. Could I just get a quick time check here? How many more people do we have?
I've got two full pages here of about 19. I don't know if there's more pages out there or not.
19 times 2, so 40-ish. Okay, good. Very good. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Joan Pettit. I've lived in Portland since 2009, and today is my first time in City Hall and my first time testifying.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm a resident of the Elliott neighborhood. I am a daily bicycle commuter, and I'm also the mother of two sons, one of whom will, fingers crossed, attend Harriet Tubman Middle School in the fall. I agree with my neighborhood association that the I-5 freeway expansion will not improve my neighborhood, but instead will worsen air pollution for Elliott residents and for children at Tubman. The City of Portland and State of Oregon have only begun to acknowledge, never mind make amends for, the devastation inflicted when the I-5 freeway construction tore a hole through the center of the city's vibrant African-American community. This project will perpetuate and grow that devastation through increased air pollution and the removal of the Flint Street overpass, an excellent low-stress cycling route I use daily. The proposed bridge for bikes will be too steep for all but the hardiest of cyclists. The caps and other service street changes are not an improvement and do not offset the additional pollution. Freeway expansion has never solved congestion, which means that this project of $450 million will be an expensive, polluting misuse of funds that could better go to solve our city's many real traffic safety problems. I want Portland to be a leader in fighting climate change and creating a healthy, livable city for all of our residents, including my neighbors and children in Elliott. I am particularly concerned about the negative impact on Tubman kids, many of whom come from our city's most vulnerable populations that have been least served by the schools in the city. This project will worsen congestion and pollution and harm our quality of life and our children's education. I urge you to remove the I-5 freeway expansion from the TSP.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mary Coolidge. I work for Audubon Society of Portland. I'm here to testify on Amendment Number 8, Bird Safe Window Standard, Volume 2A, Part 1. Audubon strongly supports the Bird Safe Window Standard Amendment in the Central City 2035 Plan. In adopting the Bird Safe Glazing Standard, Portland joins 13 other municipalities in North America that have already implemented bird safe building requirements. That includes San Francisco and Toronto. The standard itself has been written to dovetail with goals for ground floor transparency and street activation. Adoption of this amendment moves technical details of how to achieve that bird safe standard into an administrative rule, which allows BPS to provide more detailed information and direction on when and where specific materials are appropriate to be used. It also provides flexibility for developers and designers on material selection. A menu of material options will facilitate compatibility between active ground floor use and reducing collision risk for birds. This will also include a limited menu of products that are appropriate for ground floor use in order to maximize transparency, and some creating as little as 6% pattern density on the window, so really low pattern density. This amendment also creates flexibility to add and remove materials to the list as the bird safe glazing industry evolves. We imagine that there will be a lot more materials that are available in the future. We urge you to adopt the Bird Safe Glazing Amendment as proposed. I also just want to take a moment to thank Commissioner Fish for bringing Light Pollution Amendment 3 in Volume 5A, which calls for the initiation of dark skies research by staff looking at best practices to reduce the impacts of light pollution on human health and also wildlife and ecological health. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Yeah.
My name is John Hollister, and just before I start, a clarifying question. Now, do you get 2 minutes per amendment that you're going to talk about? Is that the way? I misunderstood.
John, you have a special relationship with the mayor. He'll give you whatever you want.
Okay, all right, good. Well, now that we got that cleared up. Actually, I want to talk about, if you want to talk about first item number 20, the view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs, iconic view, public assets, access, most visited park in the city, and of the five Mount Hood views from the waterfront park is the least in economic impact. And I think just the we need, you know, as you're balancing the density with the view corridors, I think that is one to highly consider. I also want to speak in support of the Volume 5A, Number 7 on the Centennial Mills, the public open space, the pedestrian connectivity. I'm very much in favor of that. And then I was looking for another amendment I proposed on September 14th, CC Northwest 08, and I looked all the way through the white sheet, and I didn't find it. Then I went to the green sheet to see if it was in late-breaking news, but no, it wasn't there either. And so I was perplexed, and I'm just a little flustered. So I'll just kind of segue. It's Commissioner Fish, I want to thank you personally for bringing the city one of the most beautiful parks in all of Portland, Fields Park. And it is visited by thousands of people from all areas of Portland. It has an iconic view of the largest, most expensive piece of public art in all of Portland, the Fremont Bridge. At $82 million in 1973, with a 4% inflation rate in today's dollars, that would be $450 million. And Stan Pinkin just sent me the name of a piece of art that was just sold in November. Do you know what that piece of art was? Ask me a question real quick.
What was the piece of art?
The piece of art, not to use my time, is the Defendus Salvador Mundi. That's close. And can you imagine having a big building painted right in the middle of that? I can't. So there are only two pieces of property that are affected in this particular view corridor. And Mayor Wheeler, as my favorite mayor ever, I would like to request that you consider sponsoring this view corridor and getting it in onto the March 17th so we can have some public debate on it.
We'll look into it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it. It's good seeing you, John. Thank you all. Thanks. Three of you.
The next group is Michael Mahaffey, Brad Molson, and I believe it might be Dave Yates. Dan, sorry again. Thank you. And then they'll be followed by Brad Perkins, Paul Ryopel, and Cheryl Vitaliano. And after them, after this group, there are 25 more names on the list.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of the Commission. And I'm Michael Mahaffey. I'm president of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. And I know our board is grateful for your considering a number of amendments, Mayor Wheeler, on Salmon Springs and Vista Bridge. I think we all recognize that we need more housing in this city. The issue really is the quality of new development and whether we're taking an evidence-based approach to make sure we're making the right decision. You've got tough decisions. We understand that. I'm speaking today for myself, and I'd like to address Volume 2A, Amendments 20 and 21 on views, and speak in the larger context of the slow but growing privatization of the urban commons within our city and in many cities. In my current work with UN Habitat in implementation of the new urban agenda, which is a very interesting, exciting development, I think, the quality of public space is looming as a central issue. High-quality public space is now understood as key for equitable access for all, for social interaction and physical well-being, for equitable economic opportunity and prosperity, and for environmental sustainability. And I'm sorry to say that around the world today, public space is under grave threat from privatization, that is, from selling off the urban commons to private interests, sometimes for the best of apparent reasons. At the time, and that's why these decisions are tough and need to be thought about carefully. Views, sunlight, and sky are an integral part of this urban commons, the public spaces that we all own, essentially. When a public view from Salmon Springs to a beautiful mountain or Vista Bridge is privatized within new buildings, someone is temporarily enriched in that case, but the entire city is permanently impoverished a little bit more. Bit by bit, we lose our heritage, our livability, and our collective urban treasure. One day, we look up and realize we no longer recognize our city, and then it's too late and we're all the poorer for it. So in closing, I think it's vitally important for Portland to show global leadership and resist this insidious degradation of our public space commons. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Brad Malson, President of the Central Eastside Industrial Council and Beam Development. Thank you, Mayor and City Council. I'm here to talk about the a lot of the issues that you've already heard. Housing is absolutely a must issue, but also jobs. We have spent, and I guess the word that I want to focus on is compromise, because we participated in a multi-year Central City planning exercise, 2035 plan and a Southeast Quadrant plan with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in a really a Portland style. We brought people in, people commented. This was hours and days and weeks and months and years of public testimony, of compromise, of talking about what would work and what wouldn't work. And then, you know, centered around this, we've been building a transportation infrastructure to support density. So I understand views. I live in the Central East Side. I understand, you know, when towers go up, blocking views going to the west, going to the east. But how do we kind of look in the rearview mirror here once we've reached a sense of compromise on how to navigate development? And without the density to take advantage of the investment in public transportation, both for jobs and for housing, I'm kind of not following the lines. I'm from New York. I grew up in Brooklyn. A lot of you know that. And I mean, views are compromised all the time to achieve additional jobs and housing and everything else. So I respect the people who come here and are passionate about the community, are passionate about being part of Portland. But I have to question why we are readdressing this when we've already reached a sense of compromise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Perfectly timed.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Remember, I used to testify here without glasses. My name is Dan Yates with the Portland Spirit. Been involved in the 2035 process for many years, and I have to say I'm extremely disappointed where we've ended up, purely from where we are in relationship to river-related and river-dependent development. I have six quick points. I'm going to race through them. First, the top-of-bank issue is the way that they want to change it will now take my property, which I've been through three greenway permits, now make me non-conforming. That will be true for everybody else who has been through the process because it's a rather major change. The new greenway trail will be moved from starting at the top of bank for the first 25 feet to now 50 feet to 75 feet. This will mean that every time someone develops, the trail will now become disconnected. And the code doesn't allow for the east-west connection. It's only a north-south code. For the life of me, I can't understand how we've spent the last 25 years building the trail. Now you want to create a checkerboard. The city continues in its planning process to ignore State Goal 15, the Greenway Code, and how it relates to river-related and river-dependent development. And specifically, our property is targeted for a terminal so that we can actually activate the river for more than just for more opportunity in the way of transportation, overnight boats, things like that. And this terminal is specifically not allowed to have any offices. I can't imagine building an airport without offices. I can't imagine City Hall without offices. How can you manage things without the right to do it? I can't, for the life of me, understand why the city would want to get involved in the dredging permit process. And originally, the first draft of the 2035 plan had the Marine Transportation Security Act of 2002 incorporated into it. All that has been removed. The last issue is the most important to me, and that is the city has, for the last 20 years, ignored Supreme Court and Ninth Circuit rulings related to greenway trails. And I do not want the city to end up like Tigard, Eugene, and Forest Grove, by refusing to incorporate Supreme Court tests that are over 20 years old into their planning code that have resulted in over $10 million in fines to other Oregon cities.
Dan, I had promised you that I would get a meeting with you and with our bureau. Has that been scheduled?
February 2nd.
Very good.
Yes, and we, because we both know that planners are not attorneys, and city attorneys are not specialists in this area. And so I'm bringing my attorneys who are specialists in this, and hopefully we can avoid the city falling into this trap because it is a big problem staring at you.
All right, thank you, and I look forward to that.
Yeah, I look forward to the meeting.
Thanks, all three of you, for your testimony. Next three, please.
Are Brad Perkins, Paul Ryopel, and Cheryl Vitaliano. And they'll be followed by 52, 53, and 54, Bob Bernstein, Emerald Bogue, and Cal Toff.
Good Hi, my name is Cheryl Vitaliano, and I want to thank all of you for your stamina, except for Mayor Wheeler, who just left.
He just had, we're not taking a break. We call it a compassion break, so we're not doing one where we all leave.
I'm
we're just kind of taking
supportive.
It
I am.
He'll be right back.
I had written all of you, and I want to thank Ms. Fritz.
Really
thank
fast.
You, Mayor. Thank you.
I'm listening.
I want to thank Ms. Fritz for writing me back, because I'm talking today about Central City District, the Amendment 7, 10, and 12. And we've been hearing some passionate discussion about views and access to the waterfront and the possibility of a wall of high rises in front of our river. And one of the reasons that I stayed here today is because no one has brought up the safety issues of what can happen if we actually build 8 high-rises and the possibility of between 5,000 and 7,000 people. And someone mentioned the possibility of Hood River being in this very small area. What I envision in case of an emergency is how are they going to evacuate? Most of us remember the floods of 1996. Chloe, you probably were in high school then.
No. I was hoping that my bookstore wouldn't end up underwater.
Okay. Well, I remember boats being tied up to McCormick and Schmitz at the River Place. So it isn't a matter of if, it's when. And if a tsunami does come, and it does come down the Willamette River, how are the people going to evacuate? And I think that needs to be included as part of this plan of, right now, there is one narrow road to leave. So I'd like you to also consider that. Thank you.
That's a good point. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Paul Riopel. I'm a resident of Northeast Portland, and thank you, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners, for giving us this opportunity. And we're here to address the, it is Volume 2B, Item 6 on the TSP project list, the Sullivan's Gulch Trail. And Brad Perkins and I are members of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Committee, and specifically the Lloyd Boulevard alignment. We're here to speak in opposition to the Lloyd Boulevard alignment. And I'm making reference to the Green Route resolution sponsored by Mayor Wheeler on December 16th, 2017. Be it further resolved that BPS and other city agencies are authorized to continue to work with community partners on similar open space projects and active transportation circuits, such as Lance Green Ring, Sullivan's Gulch Trail. And we are fully in support of Sullivan's Gulch Trail. It is the Lloyd Boulevard alignment that we oppose. And I've submitted some letters, and one of them is from another member of the Sullivan's Gulch Trail Committee, John Fruing. And we have some significant safety concerns that the alignment to Lloyd Boulevard would cause cycle crossings at MLK Boulevard and Grand Avenue, which are significantly congested areas, and congestion will increase in those areas, and bicycle safety will be significantly compromised. We instead support a proposal to actually put the Sullivan's Gulch Trail undergrade underneath the MLK and Northeast Grand Avenue bridges and connect with the Steel Bridge, and which would be more aligned with the Vision Zero plan for bicycle and pedestrian safety. And I will turn it over now to Brad Perkins. He'll use my remaining 9 seconds and talk about the rest. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If I can get a few seconds of Jack Fruing, who couldn't stay as well. He has testimony that I'll relate to here. Thank you for the time. Again, I'm going to speak to the opposition to 2B6 regarding Sullivan's Gulch Trail alignment with Lloyd Boulevard. Safety should be the utmost goal when planning bike corridors. Safety has been Sullivan's Gulch's committee's overriding concern for the past 11 years in its attempt to work with Portland Bureau of Transportation to implement an off-street trail between Gateway Green and Willamette River. The trail committee generated concept plan approved by the City Council on July 25, 2012, via Resolution 36947, directs city staff to allocate funds and continue working on this viable and safe corridor for bicycles and pedestrians, to travel slightly under all I-84 viaducts for easiest access to major north-south bike corridors. Unfortunately, for the past 6 years, PBOT's senior staff has ignored funding and development directives by the City Council for the Sullivan's Gulch Trail. The trail has documented community support from 15 neighborhood associations, three neighborhood coalitions, many businesses. The trail committee offered to raise over $1 million, but fundraising and negotiations with Union Pacific Railroad cannot begin until PBOT moves forward on funding the initial 95% publicly owned corridor segment between 21st and Willamette River. A catalyst project, the bike and pedestrian Sullivan's Gulch Bridge over I-84, is a perfect opportunity to begin development of this corridor segment by landing on the north bank 15 feet below Lloyd Boulevard, with connecting ramps to both Northeast 7th and 9th. Most importantly, this initial Sullivan's Gulch Trail segment avoids dangerous arterial traffic corridors by safely directing people underneath Grand Avenue MLK Boulevard. Unfortunately, during PBOT's initial bridge planning process, it is obvious that safety or saving money is not PBOT's main goals. For example, senior PBOT staff and KPFF engineering have not considered a 60-foot shorter 8th to 8th bridge span that would save $1.5 million connect directly to the Sullivan's Gulch Trail. If there was a change of priority by PBOT to develop the safest bike and pedestrian corridors that are off the street, or enforced Resolution 36947, reordered by you people, the trail's initial segment could take this $1.5 million in savings and combine it with $2 million meant for the trail from Prosper Portland and reallocate $2 million of the Multnomah Street bike lane upgrades and $1 million for Lloyd Boulevard sidewalk from TSB improvement funds and invest it in $6.5 million in a safe trail corridor. I'm trying to work this for you so it makes it real easy for you to accept.
We've got it. You're getting way down into the details. I think it's an interesting concept. I'd like to learn more about it. So you have my word. I will absolutely look at it, and I'll be in touch with the city planners about it as well.
Lastly, if this is going to meet Vision Zero, I can't think of a better way to do it. It's an action program that will help move that mission along, and I appreciate the time.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate your time, and thank you for the written testimony.
The next three are Bob Bernstein, Emerald Bogue, and Cal Toth, and they'll be followed by 55, 56, and 57, Melanie Yu, Douglas R. Allen, and Barbara Shaw.
Okay, and I'll start.
Please.
I'm Robert Bernstein. I've met most of you. I met you at the Sequoia protest. Commissioner Udaly, nice meeting you for the first time. So I basically back everything that Bob Salinger said about trying to maintain big trees, and reuse of water is going to be critically important. Even this year, Commissioner, even though it's raining today, I think our snowpack is about 30-something percent, and maybe it'll get up to 60% of average after this weekend. So my biggest concern is the logical model that people use for reducing house prices. You seem to be focused on a closed system, which would be if these three chairs were for sale and you had maybe five people waiting for them and you built two more chairs, seemingly the price should go down, as long as there's no price fixing by developers. I don't know. But in an open system where you have a line going, filling up this room, extending out the doors, round the street, with more and more people coming into wealth every day from this in this country and in other countries, that is an open system. So you're focusing on supply where the demand is as important. The only thing, in my opinion, that's going to drive prices down is either we become so crowded and untenable, if that's a word, untenable, but anyway, unlivable, or we become the same as other cities on the West Coast. That's how it works in my world. And I would urge you to speak to some logic teachers about open and closed systems.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, almost evening, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Emerald Bogue, and I'm with the Port of Portland. Here today to testify on language found in the commentary regarding top of bank. Specifically, we're concerned about Major Amendment 6, measuring top of bank, and the potential implications for hundreds of acres of port-owned facilities located in the north reach of the Willamette River. For some context, here's a map that shows port properties in the north reach versus the central reach. Now, I will hand this to the council clerk. I will hand many of them to the council clerk. Oh, no, it's okay. It's all right. I'll take one of them, though. All right. Anyway, everything that's blue is Port of Portland property. There's a great deal of it in the North Reach. No worries. So the issues we have today are really twofold. One is that the commentary in Major Amendment 6 calls for consistent application of this top of bank code when plans are updated for the North Reach. So that's thing one. Thing two is that we learned of this a few days ago. So to be clear, we did provide written testimony on Central City 2035 to BPS in 2016. BPS staff were responsive to our concerns. The language I'm referring to now is new to us. So our ask is pretty simple. It's to modify the commentary and code to only apply to the Central Reach and refrain from committing to other plans. You know, we know that the Willamette River has a really broad constituency, and we're all on board in making sure that it works for everyone who uses it. But we know that it works differently in different parts of the river. Applying this code to the North Reach is a big deal. The city shouldn't attempt to do it without, at the very least, engaging property owners, including the Port of Portland. We're confident that we could come to the right solution for the North Reach, but we would love to do that in the actual North Reach process and not be prescriptive in this particular plan. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So my name is Cal Toth. I'm from Goose Hollow. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm speaking to number 20 and 21 to do with views. I'm going to be very brief. I've got an email that covers what I'm going to say in a little bit more elaborately and coherently, maybe. CC 2035 provides lots of opportunities, after all, for developers to build both affordable and unaffordable housing. You know, both are happening. I think we should be more strategic and less political. Surely we can protect our iconic views and still develop what we really need. So I'm saying let's be more careful. Let's not tamper with our valuable heritage. Let's protect our views of Mount Hood and Vista Bridge. We can do this. Thanks for allowing me to speak. I'll send the email in.
Great, and thank you for coming in, and thanks for your patience, all of you who are near the bitter end here.
The next three are Melanie Yu, Douglas R. Allen, and Barbara Shaw. And they'll be followed by 58, 59, and 60, Jeff Merrick, Haytham Toulon, and Matt Hill.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm here to ask for your support for Amendments 20 and 21. Basically, I echo the sentiments of Hosea Failing's article in the Portland Tribune and others who have spoken today. Portland will not be Portland without the unobstructed, majestic view of Mount Hood. I moved here last year, and I chose Portland because of its great natural beauty. As a visitor since 2011, I enjoyed all the urban amenities the city had to offer. However, it was this incredible public views from Vista Bridge, the riverfront, and Washington Park that, without a doubt, formed my decision to permanently move here. Now, every guest that visits, I get to host, that gets that same tour without fail, and they instantly fall in love with PDX right away. I grew up in San Francisco, another city with iconic views, but even those nuts in California wouldn't consider putting up tall buildings in front of the Golden Gate Bridge or Half Dome in Yosemite, because it makes no sense from a public relations standpoint. Good restaurants, music, and shopping are now everywhere in the U.S., and they are not enough to draw the multitudes you desire or predict. Please don't forever destroy what is uniquely Portland. After all, who wants to live or visit a city and pay taxes to look at a bunch of giant glass buildings? No one. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mayor Wheeler and members of the council, my name is Doug Allen. I'm talking to volume 2B, item TR-120. I'm testifying to say that the Rose Quarter Freeway expansion is not an improvement to the local neighborhood. Please remove it from the transportation system plan of the Central City Update. The purported benefits of this freeway expansion have been thoroughly debunked. The No More Freeway Expansions Coalition has done an excellent job. Please take the time to review and understand the case that they make, that the claimed benefits to neighborhood connectivity and bicycle and pedestrian movement are illusory. I went on the ODOT tour of the site, and I have often traveled through the area on both the freeway and surface streets, and the more I learn, the more I am convinced that the coalition is correct. I ask the council one last time to please reject this project as currently planned and work with ODOT, Metro, TriMet, and residents to come up with a better approach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, Commissioners. I am Barbara Shaw, a very happily retired former city employee and a resident of the River Place condominiums, which is right next to the River Place parcels that are the subject of Volume 2A, Amendment Number 7. I guess it's no surprise I'm speaking against this amendment, primarily because it will allow 350-foot towers immediately adjacent to many acres of 35 to 40-foot buildings. This is directly contrary to the Central City Design Guideline that requires new buildings to complement the context of existing buildings. I've heard some language today where people are calling the context for this development the South Waterfront. And although that may make it easier to approve this density if that's what needs to happen, that's not the neighborhood for this development. There's a network of huge highways that separate this parcel from the South Waterfront. The correct context for consideration of this parcel is the 190 units that are the River Place condominiums directly to the north. Additionally, I want to just point out something about the characterization of this amendment as enabling affordable housing. While correct, I think it's an incomplete characterization, because it doesn't take into consideration the existing rental housing that's on the site. There's 250 or I don't know the number, but that range of housing that's there now. And although it's not affordable housing, I think it's a fair assumption that the new housing, the incomes of the people who live in the new housing, even with the affordable component, will be way in excess of what's there now, the incomes of the people who live there now. So isn't this kind of the middle, missing middle that is going to be removed? So that's it, and I want to thank you for all of the work on this.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Next three, please.
Are Jeff Merrick, Haytham Toulon, and Matt Hill, and they'll be followed by 61, 63, and 64, Tina Wyszynski, Mike Kinjala, and Gwen Baldwin.
You're up.
Well, then.
Welcome.
I'd like to start by saying thank you to the mayor and the council for allowing me to speak. Matt Hill, I'm a representative of the Northwest Council of Carpenters and also a member of Local 1503 in Oregon City, Portland. I'm addressing Volume 2B, Amendment 2, the I-5 Rose Quarter Project. It is my feeling that this is a good project going forward. This $450 million of infrastructure improvements, they're going to get us what we need, family wage jobs, keeping people employed at a decent rate to be able to afford to live in our city that isn't quite as affordable as it used to be, shall we say. The Rose Quarter, you know, the whole area is a hub of people. There's the people that come into the Rose Quarter for events at the Coliseum, at the Moda Center, the Convention Center, but it's also a major thoroughfare coming through I-5 for both commercial traffic and private traffic. Commuters, people traveling through, people vacationing. Almost 20 years ago that I moved here, it was a traffic problem then, and traffic, as we all know, has gotten worse in those 20 years, and it's going to continue to get worse, and something needs to be done to address